Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're the show designed to, well, cut through all the noise. We distill complex topics, pull out the key insights, and hopefully give you some surprising facts, maybe even with a bit of humor. The goal: to get you genuinely well-informed fast. Today we are heading out on a truly cosmic journey. We're doing a deep dive into Stephen Hawking's incredible book, A Brief History of Time. Now, this isn't just a science book. It's really a story about humanity's drive to understand the biggest questions, you know, about the universe, where we fit in. And, well, talking about this stuff, who better to mention than Stephen Hawking himself, an iconic figure, obviously, extraordinary intellect. And what's really remarkable are the challenges he faced with ALS. It sort of forced him, in a way, to develop this very visual, conceptual way of doing physics, which meant he could explain these huge, mind-bending ideas without pages and pages of dense math. Okay, let's unpack this.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating here is just how significant his scientific background was. I mean, he held the Lucasian Professorship of Mathematics at Cambridge. That's the same position Isaac Newton held. So quite the legacy there. His work on black holes, on cosmology, it was revolutionary, especially how he tried to combine Einstein's general relativity with quantum mechanics. These two theories, they just didn't seem to fit together. So he had this unique viewpoint. And his whole purpose with A Brief History of Time, really, was to make the universe accessible, to bridge that gap between, you know, high-level physics and everyone.
Exactly. So the scientist, playing along, asks, okay, what's the tortoise standing on? And she just replies, you're clever, young man, very clever, but it's tortoises all the way down.
Huh. Yeah. It's perfect, isn't it?
It really is. It just highlights those early intuitive attempts to figure things out, often flawed, but you know, a starting point.
Exactly. It shows where we began. From myths like that, we slowly move towards, well, observation and math. You had Aristotle arguing the Earth was round, then Ptolemy with his incredibly complicated model putting Earth at the center. But the real game changer was people like Copernicus and Galileo. Galileo used his telescope, saw Jupiter's moons going around Jupiter, not Earth. That was huge evidence against the Earth-centered idea.
Right. Undeniable proof, pretty much.
Then Newton comes along. Laws of motion, universal gravity. Yeah. Suddenly the universe looks like this predictable machine. Absolute space, absolute time, everything fixed. And that's how science works, isn't it? You build models, you test them, you refine them, or sometimes you have to throw them out completely.
Okay, so Newton gives us this absolute clockwork universe.
Mm-hmm.
How did that get totally turned on its head? This is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, this is where Albert Einstein walks onto the stage and he basically dismantles that Newtonian picture. First came his special theory of relativity back in 1905. He said space and time, they're not separate. They're woven together into this thing called space-time.
Space-time. One single fabric.
Exactly. What happens to one affects the other. And the key thing, the speed of light is constant, always, for everyone, no matter how fast you're moving.
Which sounds simple, but...
But the consequences are bizarre. Like time dilation, time actually slows down if you're moving really fast, or if you're in a strong gravitational field.
So time isn't absolute.
Not at all. And neither is space. You get length contraction, too. Things get shorter in the direction they're moving. Then, 10 years later, 1915, he gives us the general theory of relativity. And this redefines gravity completely.
Okay, so gravity isn't a force pulling things?
Nope. According to Einstein, it's the effect of mass and energy warping space-time. Think of like a bowling ball on a stretched rubber sheet. It makes a dip, right?
Uh-huh.
If you roll a marble nearby, it curves towards the bowling ball. Not because of a pull, but because it's following the curve in the sheet.
So planets orbit the sun because they're following the curve in space-time caused by the sun's mass.
Precisely. Gravity is geometry, essentially. The geometry of space-time.
Wow. That really is mind-bending. It means our everyday feeling of time passing uniformly or space being fixed, it's just wrong on a cosmic level.
Pretty much, yeah. Our intuition is great for catching a bus, but not so good for understanding the universe.
So if space and time can warp, what about the whole universe? Was it always here or did it start somehow? That brings us to Edwin Hubble, right, in the 1920s.
Exactly. Hubble made this incredible discovery. He looked at distant galaxies and found they're all moving away from us.
Just flying away.
Flying away. And crucially, the further away a galaxy is, the faster it's receding.
How did he know that?
Through redshift. It's like the Doppler effect for sound, but with light. Light waves from distant, receding galaxies get stretched out, shifting towards the red end of the spectrum.
Okay. So everything's expanding outwards.
Right. And if you run that movie backwards, what do you get?
Everything must have been closer together in the past. Much closer.
Exactly. Denser, hotter. Which leads you straight to the idea of the Big Bang. a single point or state of incredible density and temperature from which the universe began expanding.
And there's actual evidence for this, right? Not just theory.
Oh, absolutely. The biggest piece came in 1965, the discovery of the cosmic microwave background radiation, the CMBR. It's basically the leftover heat, the afterglow from that very early hot phase of the universe. It's everywhere we look in the sky, a faint microwave glow.
An echo of creation. That's amazing. But what does a universe with a definite beginning actually mean? Philosophically, even. It pushes physics right to the edge.
It really does. And while Einstein was revolutionizing the big stuff, cosmology, another revolution was happening with the very small, quantum mechanics. And a key part of that is Heisenberg's uncertainty principle.
Ah, yes, uncertainty. Sounds uncertain.
It is. Heisenberg realized you fundamentally cannot know with perfect accuracy both where a particle is and where it's going, its momentum at the same time.
Not because our tools aren't good enough.
No, it's not about tools. It's built into nature. The more precisely you pin down its position, the fuzzier its momentum becomes, and vice versa. Reality at that level is inherently probabilistic. Fuzzy.
Okay, so goodbye Newton's clockwork universe. If things are fundamentally fuzzy, what are the actual building blocks?
Well, down at that level, you've got elementary particles, quarks, which make up protons and neutrons inside atoms, and leptons, like the electrons zipping around the outside. And these particles interact through four fundamental forces. Gravity, obviously, holding planets and galaxies together. Then electromagnetism, that's light, electricity, magnets, all of chemistry, basically.
Okay, chew down.
Then the two nuclear forces. The weak force, which is involved in radioactive decay, and the strong force, which is incredibly powerful and glues atomic nuclei together.
Got it. Four forces.
And our best theory, the standard model of particle physics, it does a great job describing three of them. Electromagnetic, weak, and strong.
But not gravity.
But not gravity. That's the big problem. Gravity just doesn't fit into the standard model. Trying to unite gravity with the other forces, especially quantum mechanics, is maybe the biggest challenge in physics today.
And that challenge, uniting the very big, gravity relativity, with the very small, quantum mechanics, brings us right to black holes, which were Hawking's specialty, weren't they?
Absolutely central to his work.
So how do they form? And what did Hawking figure out about them? Especially beyond the event horizon, that point of no return. And what's this no-hair theorem thing?
Right. Black holes form when really massive stars die. They run out of fuel and their own gravity crushes them down and down. To a point of infinite density called a singularity. Around this is the event horizon. Cross that and you're not coming back out. Even light can't escape.
Trapped forever.
Pretty much. And the no-hair theorem is this idea that black holes are actually incredibly simple objects. Once formed, they lose almost all the complex details of the star they came from. All you need to describe a black hole, basically, is its mass, its electric charge, which is usually zero, and its spin, how fast it's rotating. That's it. No other features or hair.
Surprisingly simple for such terrifying objects.
Isn't it? But Hawking's most famous contribution came when he started thinking about quantum effects near the event horizon. He came up with Hawking radiation.
Okay, how does that work? Because nothing's supposed to escape.
Well, see, quantum mechanics says that empty space isn't really empty. It's fizzing with virtual particles. Pairs of particles and antiparticles that pop into existence for a tiny fraction of a second, borrow some energy, and then annihilate each other, vanishing again.
Okay. Like a quantum foam.
Sort of. Now, imagine this happening right at the edge of a black hole's event horizon. One particle from the pair might fall in while the other escapes. The one that escapes can't find its partner to annihilate with anymore, so it flies off into space. To an outside observer, it looks like the black hole itself has just emitted a particle.
Yeah. So the black hole isn't perfectly black, it glows.
It glows incredibly faintly. And because the escaping particle carries away energy, which is equivalent to mass, thanks to E.M.C. Hoare, the black hole actually loses mass.
So black holes shrink. They evaporate.
Over unimaginable timescales, yes. They slowly radiate away their mass and eventually disappear. This was a mind-blowing discovery.
Absolutely mind-blowing. Because it links general relativity, the black hole itself, with quantum mechanics, the particle behavior.
Exactly. It was a huge step towards that unified theory. But it also created a puzzle. the black hole information paradox.
Information paradox. What's that?
Well, quantum mechanics says information can't truly be destroyed. But if a black hole evaporates, what happens to the information about everything that fell into it? Is it lost forever? Or does it somehow get encoded in the Hawking radiation? It's a huge debate. And it led Hawking to that great quote about Einstein being wrong about God not playing dice. He said, black holes suggest God not only plays dice, but sometimes confuses us by throwing them where they can't be seen.
Hmm. I love that. Okay, so for the beginning, the Big Bang, let's jump to the end. What did Hawking say about the universe's ultimate fate?
Well, there are a couple of main possibilities, and it depends on how much stuff, how much mass and energy there is in the universe overall, its density. If the density is low, the expansion might just keep going forever. Galaxies get further apart, stars burn out, leading to a cold, dark, empty universe, sometimes called the Big Freeze or heat death. Or if there's enough density, enough gravity, it might eventually halt the expansion and pull everything back together. The universe would contract, getting hotter and denser,
leading to a big crunch. The opposite of the Big Bang.
Exactly. Collapsing back into a singularity. Though current observations suggest the expansion is actually accelerating, making the Big Freeze seem more likely.
And tied into this whole cosmic story is the puzzle of time itself. Why does it only seem to go one way? The arrow of time.
Yes, that's one of the deepest mysteries. Most physics laws work the same forwards or backwards in time. So why do we experience time flowing strictly from past to future? Hawking talks about three arrows of time. First, the thermodynamic arrow. That's the direction of increasing disorder or entropy. Things tend to go from ordered to disordered. A broken glass doesn't reassemble itself.
Right. Makes sense. Messes get bigger, not smaller, usually.
Then there's the psychological arrow. That's our perception, the fact that we remember the past but not the future. And finally, the cosmological arrow, the fact that the universe is expanding, not contracting. And the really interesting question is why all these arrows point in the same direction for us? Why does increasing disorder align with our memory and the universe's expansion? It's still debated.
So this all leads back to that grand quest, doesn't it? The search for a single theory that unites everything, general relativity and quantum mechanics. A theory of everything.
That's the ultimate goal for many physicists.
Why is it so important and why is it so darn difficult?
It's important because our current theories break down in extreme situations. Like inside a black hole singularity or at the very moment of the Big Bang, we need a combined theory, quantum gravity, to understand those moments. It's difficult because, well, gravity is fundamentally different from the other forces as described by quantum mechanics. One is about smooth, curved space-time. The other is about fuzzy, probabilistic particles. Merging them is proving incredibly hard.
Are there any candidates?
String theory is probably the most well-known attempt. It suggests that fundamental particles aren't points, but tiny vibrating strings, and different vibrations correspond to different particles. But it's highly mathematical and hard to test experimentally. But yeah, that search really drove Hawking. He famously said, "My goal is simple. It is a complete understanding of the universe, why it is as it is, and why it exists at all." Quite an ambition.
Understatement of the century. So, okay, we've wrestled with warp time, quantum fuzziness, evaporating black holes. What does this all actually mean for you listening right now? How does thinking about this cosmic stuff help us day to day?
That's a great question because the takeaways are surprisingly practical. First, I think, is intellectual humility and openness. The universe Hawking described just constantly defies common sense. Time slows down, black holes evaporate. It teaches you to question your assumptions, to realize that reality might be weirder than you think, not just in physics, but in, you know, business decisions, personal beliefs, everything. Be open to counterintuitive ideas.
Question everything. I like that.
Second, it helps us embrace uncertainty. Quantum mechanics tells us randomness and probability are fundamental. It's not just that we don't know something for sure. Sometimes it's inherently unknowable. That helps us deal better with risk and probability in everyday life. Finance, planning, even just accepting that things won't always go exactly as planned. Move away from demanding absolute certainty.
Right. Except the fuzziness.
Third, it really promotes systems thinking. Seeing how space, time, matter, energy are all interconnected on a cosmic scale. That encourages you to see connections in complex problems closer to home, too. Environmental issues, social dynamics, how different parts of a system affect each other.
Seeing the bigger picture.
Exactly. Fourth, it gives you a long-term perspective. Thinking about billions of years of cosmic history, it kind of puts your immediate worries into perspective, doesn't it? Yeah. It can reduce anxiety about small setbacks and maybe inspire thinking about legacy, about the future beyond our own lives.
Definitely puts that stressful email into context.
Huh. Absolutely. Fifth, it inspires productive curiosity. Hawking chased fundamental questions without knowing the immediate payoff. That kind of pure curiosity often leads to unexpected breakthroughs, like black hole research informing information theory. Just asking why can be incredibly powerful.
Yeah, the value of just wondering.
And finally, it helps us navigate paradigm shifts. Watching science evolve from Newton to Einstein to quantum mechanics, it shows how dramatically our understanding can change. That helps us adapt when big changes happen in our own fields or lives. Being willing to update our mental models instead of clinging to old ways of thinking, it's about intellectual flexibility.
And Hawking really embodied that desire to share this, didn't he? That belief in the democratization of knowledge. He felt these big ideas belonged to everyone. I love his quote. "We are just an advanced breed of monkeys on a minor planet of a very average star, but we can understand the universe. That makes us something very special."
It's a fantastic quote. And really, that's the core message, isn't it? The universe is stranger, yes, but also more beautiful and ultimately more understandable than we might first think. And we humans, despite being tiny specks, have this incredible ability to figure out its fundamental rules.
It is pretty special. So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's leave you with a final thought to chew on. It builds on Hawking's own famous conclusion in the book. Imagine we actually did it. Humanity finds that complete theory of everything, and somehow it's understandable, at least in principle, by everyone. What would that actually mean? To, in Hawking's words, know the mind of God. Would finally having that ultimate blueprint diminish the mystery? Would the universe just become a solved puzzle? Or would that complete understanding paradoxically reveal even deeper layers of wonder? Would knowing the rules make the cosmic game even more awe-inspiring? Something for you to ponder,